I'm Joe McMullen, and it's my pleasure to be talking with the New Standards in some rehearsal space in northeast Minneapolis, and been invited to kind of hang out and get to know them a bit. And they'll be in St. Cloud, by the way, next Tuesday, December 9th, performing at the Pioneer Place on 5th with a holiday show plus. Could we even use the word extravaganza?
It's up in the air exactly how extravagant it's going to be. It's all about how many people we can get onto the bus up to St. Cloud with us. It's how many people will fit onto that bus. But yeah, it's going to be fun.
It'll be a party. It'll definitely be an extended party than our usual trio.
Well, and then I say with that bus, let's have the local folks who are in our community, who love St. Cloud, who always seem to want to hop down the highway to Minneapolis, to the big city, come out to the little city and support the artists that do come to St. Cloud. That's a big point for our local folks to pay attention to.
Yeah, definitely. And you've got such a beautiful facility up there. We played the Pioneer Place Theater on 5th one other time, and I mean, not to toot our own horn, but a lot of people came up to us and were like, oh my God, that was so great. I'm going to tell everybody next time you come. Now, all you people who said that, it's on you. Let's get the Pioneer Place Theater on 5th full of beautiful Christmas soul.
Yes, come down.
We're talking specifically with John Munson, Steve Rome on vibes, and also Chan Poling on piano. They are the New Standards. You've been together about 4 years now, if my information is correct. And do you feel the band has evolved into a kind of a comfortable collective at this point? Noting you all come from very different previous lives, previous experiences musically. So in these few years of being together, have you kind of found this connection that you can kind of hop together?
Who are these men? Who are these men?
I think if your band stops evolving, you're screwed, basically. It was comfortable right from the get-go, and that's why we kept on doing it, and it's continued to evolve over the course of the last 4 years. I feel like we are kind of maybe at a plateau moment right now, which is a pretty comfortable place, but we're eager to start pushing out and exploring new territory again. You know, when you finish a record and it's time to start going out and promoting the record and playing some shows and stuff, that's a good place to be. You want to be a little bit on a plateau and in a comfortable place.
As I listened to your first CD, it's been out a couple of years now, recorded live over a couple of shows, I wondered how much some of the classic songs are songs of your personal collection, of your youth, of your parents, the influence such as thinking of the Curtis Mayfield, the Gershwin, of course, those are songs of our lifetimes. But how much of those came, and that first CD came from what you listened to in your own collections, or if maybe family or growing up and memories, how music can be part of our lives?
Well, yeah, a lot of those songs did come from when we were young, you know, younger, from the 70s and from our parents' collections. You're right. But some of those songs are just really resonate in cool ways. And like we're doing the song, I don't know if we'll do it at the Pioneer Place Theater, but we've been working on MacArthur Park. Do you remember that song?
I'm not overly familiar, but please remind me.
A friend of ours, Matt Wilson, brought it up, and it's been kind of haunting us lately. It's an old Jimmy Webb song, right?
Yeah, the same guy who wrote Wichita Lineman and some of those like pop epics of the late 60s.
Yeah, totally. I had that record. My dad had that record in our house, and I heard it when I was a kid, and now we're working on it now. So it's really cool to dig up the old stuff. But we also do, a big part of what we do is postal, you know, we do Postal Service in this new record, and we do, Arcade Fire and The Clash. And,
Is there a new album?
Underground. And yeah. So you can't forget that. This is not about oldies we really don't like the word lounge because it connotes the kind of shtick that we're not about.
I don't hear lounge at all in your music.
Thank you.
At all.
That's nice to hear. That's definitely nice to hear. I think with the first record, we were trying to figure out exactly what the project was at that point, and it did have this weird kind of blend of September Song and New Pollution and My Ship and Song Number 2 by the Blur, and this record, and for me a little bit, is in response to a couple of friends who said, what's a new standard about Inchworm? What's a new standard about that? It's an old classic jazz song. It's not a new standard. It's an old standard. And I think with this one, we kind of consciously wanted to set about looking at the new, at stuff that was recorded in the 60s and later, and pull from that. And we didn't go back to any of what we would think of as chestnuts and old standards. It's all, and most of the tunes are what we think of as rock and roll, you know, which is a pretty, there's a lot of different music that I think that rocks that some people might not think rocks.
That was going to be one of my questions. The new standards, you know, new CD is just being available, rock and roll. It's an ironic name for a band that's described as minimalist and, you know, recreative and unplugged. So you use the word, you know, rock and roll to describe a band that's retuning and taking a very lo-fi approach, if you will.
Yeah, you saw the irony. That's good.
Yeah. Okay. I was okay with that. And we're going to, you know, some of the songs on there. I walked into your rehearsal and you were doing Elvis Costello's Watching the Detectives. That's on the new CD. And I'm excited to hear the Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs. I've been following them out of New York for how many years now? And so it's a nice, even a couple tips of hats to fellow musicians in Minnesota I see on the new album.
Well, we love doing Paul Westerberg songs. We do one of those on the first record. We do I Will Dare. And on this record, Rock and Roll, we've done Androgynous, and in a complete, I'm very interested to hear, which we probably will, second or third hand, what Paul thinks of it, because it's really a complete rethinking of that song.
Here comes Dick, he's wearing a skirt. Here comes Jane, you know she's sporting a chain. Same hair, a revolution. Same build, evolution. Tomorrow, who's gonna fuss?
The Crash Test Dummies, I've forgotten Brad's last name, but the lead singer of Crash Test Dummies is a beautiful version of that too. It's on their one of their CDs eons ago of Androgynous, but it's just he's got that big deep voice. Yeah. But I'm excited.
I'm sure he's like, I do more than whoa. I do other songs too.
I wanted to ask about the music industry. Really, seems to be in love with technology, the MIDI, the musical interfaces, the digital, and all the voice processing. And in fact, I'm not particularly into Kanye West, but apparently his new CD is just full of his processed voice. And I know the industry really wants to put these tools and things on to the musicians' voices. How do you stay away from that temptation?
Well, it's just not about, it's just, what are you doing? What are
you, yeah. My BlackBerry. Chan was texting us the answer.
Yeah, he's getting texting the answer. So yeah, you know, how do you resist temptation, or is it not, that's just the way the band is?
It's just not the project. You know, I think all of us think those tools are amazing and fascinating, and really, you know, Radiohead did about as much as you can do with that stuff already. I mean, rhythm and blues is, Kanye West is amazing, but everybody's playing catch up with the stuff that Tom York did to his voice several records ago, you know? I mean, it's cool, but, you know, when you do that, I mean, people always will describe that as, wow, it's cool, it's like, sounds like a robot. And what is a robot? I mean, it's something that's kind of been dehumanized, stripped of its soul, perfected in some way towards some kind of absolute idea of beauty. And we are really striving for a very particular human, imperfect ideal of what beauty is. My favorite singers their voice falls apart in a beautiful way when they're emoting at the highest levels, and I'm in love with that, and that's to me is that's the direction that I want to head in And certainly that's a direction that we're heading in. We want our group to feature the vocals very much in a kind of the plainest possible way. When we record all together with the instruments in the vocals, because you sing in a certain way when you're embracing your instrument, and you're expressing on all cylinders. You know, you're coming out of every which way, and that's what we're heading towards. That's what we want to do.
We're talking with the New Standards. John Munson, Steve Rome, and Chan Poling are going to be, they have two gigs actually. There will be a Saturday night. I understand it's sold out already at the Fitzgerald or close to it.
I think they're scattered singles. You know, if you want to come by yourself, it'd be like, it's kind of fun. I mean, if you ever go to like a Twins game and you go by yourself, that's a good thing. You'll meet, I guarantee you that the people that you will meet at the Fitzgerald Theater, if you just come down by yourself, you'll have a damn good time. There's beautiful people that are going to be there.
And then it's Tuesday night in St. Cloud. There are tickets still available, so check that out at the Pioneer Place. We have a link at kvsc.org, by the way, right now. I want to talk more about some of the production of your music. Dan Wilson has produced your first album, and now the second album is just fresh off the press, if you will. Did he have any role as producer in the interpretation of your songs, or particularly in the recording process, or is that really what Steve, John, and Chan have, the interpretation, is, and he comes in later?
He does come to rehearsals when we're working the songs out, the arrangements out, and that's, you know, very valuable to us, I think. But you know, it's kind of later on in the process. But he's very helpful that way. Yeah.
The thing that I find that Dan does is he's kind of like, you know what, that one's, it's, that's cool, it's good, it's not special. You know, I mean, we chucked several things that we were kind of excited about. You know, he's just like, yeah. No, it's good. That'll be good in your live show. It's not going to make this record. And you know, those are hard. It's good to have help with those decisions, because it's very hard to have perspective on your own music. And I think really that's the quality of a great producer, which I think Dan is just getting better and better and better with every record that he does. I mean, the Jeremy Messersmith record that he just produced, I think, is a really nice piece of work. I think the stuff that he's done with Doty is really first rate. And obviously, he's a hell of a songwriter.
So, Grammy Award winning at that.
Yeah. Grammy Award winning, yeah.
Well, the New Standards, I've read, have a rule that each song you work on and perform must be someone's favorite. Oh, Steve has the microphone. And each arrangement must bring something new to the band. Does this requirement lead to any spirited debate among you? So as you look at songs, whether you choose to chuck them or keep them, how does three people resolve a vote?
There's a lot of spirited debate, and everyone kind of comes from a different place where... John and Chan have their favorite songs. I have my favorite songs. And usually it's a pretty open playing field. Everyone's kind of willing to try other people's ideas. And if it's an idea that was compelling or kind of sticks, or someone really wants to do it and they keep pushing it, it will kind of cycle through the filtering process. And then it's kind of like you have this handful of tunes and you throw it up against the wall, and maybe two out of eight might stick. And a half a year from then, only one of them might be there, because we may have tried a version of a song and played it live and it fell flat. And someone said, I don't want to do that again live. And then sometimes it's just, we'll be screwing around and someone will say, hey, let's do Last Christmas by Wham. And all of a sudden, it sounds great and everyone's on board, and there's a synergy there. There's an energy. And it just, it all comes together. Sometimes we beat ourselves up trying to make one of our favorite tunes happen. And sometimes it's two rehearsals, it's done. So there's no rhyme or reason to it when it comes down to, like, what gets picked. It's always kind of a favorite. And sometimes it isn't. Sometimes, like this MacArthur Park, I have to admit that I hadn't heard the song, and now I can't get it out of my head. And I'll probably do some foraging back in the history of this writer, just because I got educated.
It's like when you first listen to Pet Sounds or something like that.
Yeah,
you only knew the Beach Boys as surf tunes, and all of a sudden you realize how much orchestration, how much is there at that time in history. Yeah. A couple questions for you, Steve. On the vibraphones,
yes.
Did you ever play in a marching band? And I only say that because I have such a love for marching bands.
No.
Like, I don't have any children old enough. I have a little toddler, I cry for other people's children, particularly the timpani. And you know, they go by and they're working so hard. And I think of you, and I hear the vibes on many of the songs, including "Love Is a Lie." And you just can't stop. It's instant smile. You know, instant smile. So, no marching band history.
Well, a high school drummer, you know, the built-in marching band playing at the pep games and that kind of thing. I went to college for music, and that's kind of where I picked up the vibraphone. I was a drum set player first and always, and then that kind of morphed into having to learn percussion. And then years later, it was easier to get work as a vibraphone player, and I couldn't, when I moved back to Minneapolis, I couldn't afford a rehearsal space to play drums, and I had this old vibraphone, so I said, hey, this is a good idea, I'll just put it together and practice in my studio apartment, and ultimately, I was able to, put together some little groups and play around, and now that was a long time ago.
And without adding any type of, you know, Chan's been in the music biz since the mid-70s, late 70s with the Suburbs, and of course Trip Shakespeare and all the other incarnations of Pleasure to Semisonic and other bands that John's been in. So you're kind of the younger guy, and how do you bring your vibes into the process of making sounds and get your voice, your music, and your instrument part of that process? I know these guys are very egalitarian, I know that.
From my standpoint, in the group, I try to come in with ideas that are kind of idiomatic to the vibes, things that wouldn't have been cooked up otherwise, and then I present them. I'll come in and I'll have worked out maybe a cool little idea, and I'll play that, and Chan will go, oh, that's pretty, I like that, what is that? And I'll say, oh, I just made it up. And then sometimes someone will latch on and go, oh, you know, I was just listening to this tune, let's see if we can, you know, marry these two ideas together. But that's kind of, you know, the vibraphone is kind of like the piano, and it's kind of the drums of the group. So a lot of times Chan or John will come in with an idea, and I will just start to pretend I'm the drummer and kind of fill in the blanks. Because I don't sing in the group, that's playing the vibes and being the drums are kind of my duty, as I look at it, and the smart aleck.
We don't let that guy out of the bag too often. We keep him tightly bound up in the bag.
And I know, you know, the new album, you do have the album that we all have has some jazz songs on it, and of course reinterpretations of pop songs and classic songs. And I know, Chan, you have quite a jazz background too, so there's the Gershwin influence, a little bit of some jazz, at least jazz interests, and piano training, MacPhail Center.
I'm a hobbyist.
Hobbyist.
I mean, definitely more of an interest in the... Steve is more of the jazz guy. I sit and learn at his feet daily, so definitely. I mean, I loved jazz when I was a kid growing up, but I never really got too deep into it till recently.
Chan's more about jazz hands.
Yeah.
Jazz hands, which are terribly important.
A lot of twinkling going on in the toes and in the fingers, too.
Do your instruments ever limit your choices for songs because you have vibes, you have a bass, and you have piano, or do you not even think of it in those terms?
Don't
obviously you don't, because I think I'm answering my own question, but...
Yeah, if you think you can do The Clash, or if you can do London Calling with vibes and stand-up bass, then I think it's wide open.
London Calling to the faraway towns, that war was declared, and battle come down. London Calling to the underworld, come out of the cupboards, you boys and you girls. The wheat is growing thin, and engines stop running, but I have no fear, 'cause London is burning, and I live by the river. London Calling, the imitation zone, forget it, brother, you can't go at it alone. London Calling, the zombies of death, I quit holding out and draw another breath. London Calling, I don't wanna shout, talking, I saw you nodding now. London Calling, so we ain't got no
yellowy eyes. The ice age is coming, the sun is zooming in, the engines stop running, the wheat is growing thin, a nuclear era, but I have no fear. London is drowning and I live by the river.
I think Chan thinks of it that way. I occasionally find myself going like, you know, as I'm kind of like cycling through stuff and going like, I wonder if that would be a thing to do. And I'll think, no, it's just too much about the drums. Frequently, that turns out not to be the case. New Pollution is a perfect example. Steve came in with that, and I was like, how could you ever do that without, you know, drum set?
It's the Beck song, of course.
Yeah, the Beck song, New Pollution, yeah. Well, it turns out you can.
And you can, you can.
I sometimes think that the absence of the kick and snare drum, you know, the 2 and 4, the 1 and 3, is... sometimes the absence, the hole that makes really sucks you in even more into the groove.
You fill it in yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You let fans suggest songs for the band to contemplate on your website. How seriously do you take those fan suggestions, whether it's from the website or as you're gigging?
London Calling was a fan suggestion. There's been a number of them. Wild Horses, which is something that we recorded for the record but didn't put out, it was a fan suggestion.
It's on MySpace now.
Yeah.
Wild Horses on MySpace.
Yeah, there's that. We look at them and we take them seriously. Sometimes I wonder if the fans take the idea of making suggestions seriously based on the
all the challenges have been issued here from John Munson. Well, actually, my question's from my friend Dave Lee. I told him as we were talking to you, and he says, "What's the worst record you ever dropped a needle on the turntable and never played more than once?" Or to put it in other terms, a guilty indulgence. In my example, you know, I grew up and even though I was into indie music as a young child, I still love Crystal Gayle and Anne Murray. I mean, there's just something about those songs. Some of those songs, they bring me back maybe to a wedding dance he went to as a kid. His is REO Speedwagon. You know, there's something about a couple of, you know, an album that just, you know, it's kind of a guilty indulgence.
Well, I always thought that that the Carpenters were way too square for to be acknowledged, but recently now I've been listening to them and going, this is really interesting, beautiful music. It's just really a weird kind of flip for me coming from more rock and roll. But
and there's a compilation about 10 years back of a lot of bands doing If I Was a Carpenter, and it's totally different takes on those square songs, if
definitely.
You will.
Yeah. That's a guilty pleasure, and Burt Bacharach and stuff like that.
I don't feel any guilt for my adoring the Carpenters. I love them so much. But I can relate to that. I got over it somewhere. I would say... It's funny to say it now because they've got a new record out and stuff, but AC/DC is kind of one of those things for me. It's really not who I am at all anymore as a musician, but it was one of the first big rock shows that I went to. A guy like some dude came up and like I bought a program to their, you know, I brought the tour book, and some guy like pushed me down in the bathroom and took my program from me. I was like a little teenager. And
did you smell that weird smell in the air for the first time too?
Yeah.
Mine was at REO Cheap Trick on Harriet Island. Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. But I love to, Back in Black is just a defining. I like that early AC/DC stuff. I want to turn it up loud when I hear it.
And they're still touring, aren't they?
They just came through. Yeah. They just came through. My friend said that they are incredibly, incredibly old. But my whole perspective on that thing is changing, too.
Steve, a guilty pleasure.
You know, I've got a Sienna minivan, and it has a cassette player in it. And the last dose that I gave myself was a couple Susie and the Banshees albums. It was, I hadn't listened to it in a long time. I kind of been unearthed. I moved recently and got these boxes of cassettes, and I've just been grabbing things. And
old mixtapes and stuff.
Yeah. And I put in this Susie and the Banshees, and it's still horrible, kind of.
Band album.
no span of. I was a big waver. I was, you couldn't get any more wave than me. I had the hair and listened to The Cure and was sad, so sad. And Susie's still kind of sad, but it's kind of fun to listen to it for the production values now. I listen to it with different ears because I don't think I appreciate it. Like the drumming on it is really quite fantastic and really creative. I tend to like to listen to the drums and it all like, you know, passed me. I was probably into Rush and the Police. That satisfied my drum urge back then, but not the sad mascara phase. But so I've been listening to that, but it only takes about one pass on each side of the old Maxell, and then I'm done with it. But it was fun.
We're talking with the New Standards. They have a show in St. Cloud on Tuesday night. I think it's 7:30-ish, and come out early and have a cocktail, and there's a nice lounge up front now. Yeah. And KVSC will be there as well. Well, Chan and John have been making music since the 70s and the 80s in respective bands, of course, Suburbs, Trip Shakespeare, and so forth. Can you two briefly talk about bringing that fan base who's been with you, and I'm one of those. You know, I've been with you since the 80s and followed your music and come to your concerts. Bring that fan base now into the New Standards, that concept of people who've known your work now, how do they come and get to know you in this evolution?
I think it's on them. I honestly feel like the truth of the matter is, if you come, you'll dig it. So many people have come up to me and gone like, wow, man, what have you been doing? Wow, this is cool. I like what you're doing now. You know, it's not like a big giant rock show, but you know, we're all a little older and it's a cool vibe. You can sit down and have a beer and listen to it. It really does lay bare the poetry of the music and the lyrics in a way that is super satisfying to perform. And I think people really respond to that too. I think especially people when they're in a kind of a more reflective kind of point in their life, perhaps, you know, they're like, I just find as I've grown a little bit older, I listen more and more closely to the lyrics to hear if there's honesty and truth being expressed in them, you know, and those are the songs that I like to listen to. And they're also the songs that we like to sing.
Oh, me?
Yeah. The fans of the Suburbs and have been with you since the albums of 76, 77 on and all the reissues and the shows. How do you talk to them and get them to explore with the New Standards?
I found that the fans that do come down, like John says, go, oh, this is really cool, you know. But the thing about the Suburbs and even Shakespeare and Semisonic too is it's a whole different thing, you know. It has to do with nostalgia and with those songs, you know. It has to do with that personality. Bands are like tribes, you know. They're you join the tribe and you follow them around and you identify with them, and that's from an era. It's a whole different thing. I kind of haven't been in that tribe for a long time and been pursuing other things. And to tell you the truth, we started playing in the New Standards for fun. We thought it was, we enjoyed it. And that's what it's about. And if we could gather the same kind of rabid following that other bands had, I'd welcome that. They can come on. It'd be nice. We could, you know. I think the last crowd you played to was 10,000 or something. And the Suburbs did a little show a few years ago for 10,000-15,000 people. That would be nice. New Standards in stadiums. Let's do it.
I can see it now.
Yeah, I can see it now.
I just have a couple more questions to round out the interview. Some other Minnesota bands have had some side projects. I'm thinking like Golden Smog with Gary Louris of the Jayhawks, and you've got Jeff Tweedy coming in from Wilco, and I've just forgotten the bassist from...
Mark Perlman? No,
I'm thinking of... Soul Asylum's guitarist or bassist.
Danny Murphy?
Dan Murphy. They don't tour much, though.
That's a complicated schedule to work. I mean, especially with Tweedy's, he's monumentally busy. His band is on a wild, successful flight. And having been on the kind of trip that he's on myself, you know, I mean, maybe not to the same extent, but it gobbles up your whole life, basically. There's no working around that schedule. You're basically at the beck. That's one thing about a band, too, is you're at the beck and call of that effort. If you're doing it for real, if you're really doing it that is all you're doing. You can't, really can't do much besides that.
And my question is, because, you know, they put out an album, they don't get to get together to perform it much often, but you're putting a priority on getting in front of your fans. Obviously, with this Christmas show, you got one in St. Cloud. You played in St. Cloud earlier this year, and I know you play frequently out in New York, and I'll find out about that venue in just a moment. But, you know, you're putting a priority about getting this music in front of your, even though you all have schedules and lives.
This is my band now, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, this, it's a funny thing. We were talking with Chris Remen Schneider over at the Star Tribune, and he goes, you know, I mean, your first record came out, and I was kind of like, huh, you know, a little side project. We really don't think of it that way. It's much more, people are find this shocking because it is covers and stuff like that, that it's actually quite central to what we're doing now as artists. We're doing other things also, but in terms of like bandy things, this is a big part of what we're doing. It's a very central project, and we take it seriously. It's not just like a lark.
Because we get to perform, you know. It may be another one person's words, you know, but we do our own songs too. We'll sneak a few of them in there.
Oh, yeah.
But it's because we get to actually really perform on our instruments that we love. You know, that's why I'm just into it so much, having so much fun. I really get to stretch out and play the piano and sing.
And it's, you know, I can see that you guys just don't get along at all. There's just this band of angst, yeah. My final question is, tell me about Joe's Pub. It's a place you apparently gig a lot in New York and Manhattan. And who's that audience? And what's that? Paint a picture of what that club is like.
It's a great club. We're really lucky to play at Joe's Pub. It's the public theater club in New York, right? Isn't that how it pans out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have been blessed. The people that book the place and run the place love us there, and they keep having us back.
It's a great showcase club. It's about listening to music. It's kind of like a cabaret type theater club. Really cool.
It's wildly eclectic too, and so I think that's kind of what's appealing about us to them is the fact that we're pretty eclectic in our approach too. So that it's like, oh wow, there's a lot here to love. I don't love every song, but I love a lot of it, and it's like other people seem to like some of the things I don't like, so whatever. Yeah, they're into it, and that's great. It is a beautiful place. It's like your fantasy of what a, you know, hip New York hangout is like. That's what it is. It's the living embodiment of your fantasy.
Well, those are my questions. Anything you wanted to add about the new standards? New CD is out, and newstandards.com is one link to find out more about Chan, John, and Steve. But anything else that might tell your story a little better to the KVSC listeners?
I mean, the truth of it is to get an idea of what it is, you need to come to the show. I mean, that's always the case with any music, but we're really about live. You know, there's something about what happens when we're up there on stage. I think we kind of reveal even more about what the songs are than what you can get from the record. I fully endorse you going down to the, you know, the Fetus or wherever and buying your copy of the record too. But if you want to see what we're up to now, you need to come to the show on Tuesday or on Saturday.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate your time, and maybe I'll get to hear a little bit of the rehearsal here if you don't have to. Yeah, here we have a horn section waiting, so I don't want to get the horns angry.
They're across the street. I'm sure they're mad. Mad as hell.
Mad as hornets. All right, thanks.
Snow lays on the the chain fields, there's a blessing on the ground. It's coming down. If your lanes are crammed with children, there's a blessing on your town. On a lucky Monday, Mrs. Braintree, all your lanes are wax and silver, and the stores are lit for vagabonds. It's coming down. Go home, go home. You're a chilly northern woman. Go home from yonder bus stop, because there's a blessing on the ground. Mrs. Braintree, it is written, when the snows come over Dixie, all the roads are closed and the stores are lit for vagabonds. It's coming down. Snow lays on the chain fields, there's a blessing on the ground. It's coming down. If your lanes are crammed with children, there's no order to be found. The roads are closed and the stores.